This week we're doing 19, and on Follow the White Rabbit 19, I'm going to introduce another character. He's a fellow partner in this in a roundabout way. He's on my team. I don't really know his actual real name. He knows mine, but I don't know his. And he goes by the call handle Lord Nelson. And he will be live. We're going to have him live during some different things across the pond in Europe. And he's one of my correspondents, if you will. An inside look at the United Kingdom and the different political movements there, as well as different places around Europe. But in this particular one, we're talking about the United Kingdom and some various different tactics and strategies and practical politics. And you have to keep in mind this was done over voice over IP from my end, talking to him on a cell phone somewhere in Europe. It's amazing what you can do with technology, and I think it comes out okay. You know, some spots aren't perfect, but you got to keep all that in mind. But I think you'll maybe learn one or two things by listening to it, and hopefully you'll find it entertaining. And I'll be back after that in the end to make a couple points. So I hope you enjoy 19, and this is the interview with Lord Nelson. Hello, this is Horace the Avenger, and I have with me a comrade. He goes by the name Lord Nelson. Can you hear me, Lord Nelson? Everything coming through okay?
Yes, I'm hearing you fine.
How's life across the pond?
It's very good. It's very, very interesting. I've had a long and interesting day, and I've been looking at news articles and trying to watch the things the way things are going at this end.
Yes. The indigenous white rabbits are jumping around over there, aren't they?
Well, if you watch the corporate media, you wouldn't really think so. But when you talk to people privately, it's pretty obvious that more and more people just are not buying the corporate line, if you like.
Yeah, over here, everything's about the Taliban, our President Obama, who of course is busy. He's busy being black, and he's so good at it, he won a Nobel Peace Prize for it. Maybe you heard about that.
Yes, I did. There was. Some Norwegians gave him the Nobel Peace Prize.
Yeah.
So apparently it's something that you might do in the future.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
it's very interesting concept.
It's pretty funny. They're doing all these news articles here about how much he's golfing. He's golfed more in his first year than George W. Bush did in his whole second term.
Well, isn't that something? He should get a prize for that at least.
Yeah, that's what he was getting a prize for. Thurgood Marshall was the first African on the Supreme Court, and he was asked what he was going to do when he retires, and he said, not a damn thing. He's going to sit on his ass, is precisely what he said. So it looks like Obama's kind of following tradition a little bit. And we got Hillary, of course. Hillary's taking up the white man's burden. She's got to do everything now, which is kind of funny. So affirmative action is now at the top office on the planet, which is good. This is where it should be.
The most fun I ever had was when Hillary started running for to lead the Democrats.
Democrats, yes.
And but then suddenly she had to come up against a black man.
Right.
And in the religion of political correctness, which Hillary's a fully paid up member of, black male trumps white female. So instead of getting, are you going to vote for Hillary or are you a sexist? It was, will you vote for Obama or are you a racist?
Yeah, that was
and
brilliant.
Racist. I loved it, and you know, I hope Mrs. Clinton gets trumped every time, and she just deserves everything she gets in that respect.
Well, this is funny.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to mention that in Anglosphere, if you're working around someone and their job is to be black, in other words, they're an affirmative action hiree, your job is to not be black. And so Hillary now has taken up the white man's burden. She's got to do all kinds of stuff. When General Motors was going bankrupt, you remember that? The Germans called her. They don't call him. They call her. When the Russians want something, she's got to go around to Europe and stuff like that. It's become funny. But she's not president. Of course, she has a great deal of power. She could kick him out of there, which is, this has become very, very entertaining to me. And I'm going to let you tell your next story, because your next story is funny about Stormfront. But I'm going to talk about all these attacks they're having on the largest white media in the world. So go ahead.
Well, I just want to say very quickly, we're talking about Obama, and just a couple of hours ago, I was surfing a movie website called watchmovies.net. You can maybe find it that way. That's the exact website address, I can't remember, but their ratings, the most number one rated movie they have for this week is a documentary about Barack Hussein Obama. And that's been rated number one. But what's really interesting, when you read the comments, the people are basically slagging the guy off and saying, why the hell has this been rated as the number one movie for this website? Yeah? And so it's like they've fixed the ratings to make it the number one most approved of video on the whole website, but people just aren't buying it. I think the website is www.watchmovies.net. I think there's a hyphen in between watch and movies.
Well, they're promoting it. They're promoting it, and let me tell you why. It's all over HBO here, high definition HBO in the States. So they're probably just promoting it. You know, I haven't watched it, but I saw it on last night. I just didn't feel like watching it. Of course, it is propaganda, but they can't. They can't do anything about it. What they're doing is Fox News. Fox News is coming under horrendous attacks by Obama because it's the whitest and the wealthiest. And they're basically singling them out for attacks. They want this bill, Fairness in Media, where they take from one media company and give to others. And we've been accused of writing this script because basically they're attacking them racially. And every day Glenn Beck on Fox News goes into this, but he can't really go into it, so it becomes kind of funny.
I'm interested in how much the people on the ground, the average everyday person, is how many of them are actually seeing this for what it really is. I'm sure a lot of them are so gone.
It is. We are less demoralized here now than in the UK. Many parts of the UK, as far as the London sections and the hipster sections, are still gone. But in America, America is coming out of a demoralized state very, very quickly. Of course, we were demoralized more and faster than any other part of Anglosphere. Also, we always had African problems, which you really didn't up until recently. So I think there's many factors involved, but it's become rather entertaining.
Yeah, I'm watching it with interest, what's happening. In Britain, people are getting very, very resentful, and I think the establishment, both government and media, are really kind of getting very, very out of touch. The appearance of Nick Griffin on Question Time a couple of weeks ago, the establishment really shot themselves straight through their head, because although he didn't do a very good performance, he became the victim. And having that black African woman tell 8 million Brits that the British people don't actually exist, I mean, I could almost just feel the anger from 8 million viewers who wanted to put their fists through their television set.
Yeah,
and I even had phone calls from people back in the UK who are not so much white nationalists, but they said it was terrible, and that Asian guy told Nick Griffin to go to the South Pole. Well, there's 8 million British people watching this, and they're watching the one person who's trying to stand up for the indigenous people of Britain being harangued, you know, and non-whites, even non-British non-whites, like an American non-white, basically getting so, you know, very aggressive and very, how can I put it, but it really did backfire on the establishment tremendously. I don't know what they were doing, but it was the best thing that could ever happen for the BNP.
Right, it's a softball. What's happening is the average British person, the big upside to Nick Griffin, and the fact that he was given a hard time, just like you stated, is that everyone in Britain sees themselves as him because they've been in those situations now, right? They've been in the same situation that Nick Griffin was in, and Nick Griffin has taken in the chin for them. Nick Griffin has done a couple things that I'm going to talk about in my next MP3, some little slight talking points that come from our enemies that I don't like. But other than that, it's very useful to have someone like Nick Griffin out there. What becomes useful in that situation is he looks just like every other average Briton, and these people are getting a little too uppity, and they don't have any real power. They have power given to them.
Well, I think that the establishment really let the mask drop, and it showed itself for the real vile anti-white hateful thing that it really is. And that's what I saw in that show, was like the mask just slipped.
Yeah. It was great, and the fact that they let an African and an Asian ask the questions or make the statements is even better. It's fantastic. That's just what we want to see right now. The people running Anglosphere are in so much trouble. All my sources say they're going to throw one of the biggest wars anyone's ever seen. They got problems they can't get out of. And they got financial problems they can't get out of either. So it should be interesting to see how this comes about and how this is all plays out. But yeah, that is perfect. It's not going to be white rabbits do not see things like other rabbits. They're coming out of a lot of negative conditioning. You know, they've been told that Asian rabbits is wonderful. Asian rabbits is so sexy. Black rabbits are so wonderful. They're so peaceful. Well, that's not what they're seeing, is it?
Of course it's not. And one interesting thing is, when I read the British newspaper websites, and they're given the usual anti-white establishment view, but then you read the comments, and the comments are 90% on our side. And, you know, I've been doing this game for quite a lot of years, and I haven't quite seen it like that before. I can remember when, if you wanted to put a pro-white point of view, you were mercilessly ganged up upon. But now it's like the tide is getting so big they can't control it. Normally, you get a lot of people putting our point of view, but they managed to beat it all down. Whereas the tide of people coming out on our side in the comment sections of the newspaper websites, etc., it's getting so big it's like they just haven't let the flood continue.
Yeah, it's now becoming a tidal wave. I'll tell you another story that happened. I was sent a clipping from a San Francisco. You know how they have like little papers in the United States, just like they have little papers in Leeds or Birmingham or whatever, and they have these little online news things for Seattle or for, you know, San Francisco. This was out west. These are very liberal sections. Well, one of the commenters had posted anti-racism is just a code word for anti-white. And I've seen I've seen this now twice out there. And I have the link, actually. It wasn't a great mantra post. It wasn't perfect. But just to see that is pretty interesting. I know, very liberal. They were talking about civil rights. And, of course, what he should have said, well, no one's talking about flooding Africa with non-Africans and saying, you know what, we got a civil rights problem now. In other words, he didn't go into mantra thinking. No one's talking about flooding Asia with non-Asians saying, you know, we got a civil rights problem. We need to force integrate. Only white children are being affected by this. Only white countries are doing it. Only white leaders are supporting it. It's genocide. But they did. He did a roundabout way, and he did put anti-racism as a code word for anti-white. And I was very, very shocked by this, because I don't even know who this person is. Obviously, someone's getting it.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's very interesting that he actually quoted Bob. I'm sure that's not a coincidence. Maybe he's a visitor to the Bugs website. Who knows?
Well, that's on my talking points. Anti-racism is a good word for anti-white because, you know, we're all about stealing here. Theft is legal in practical politics.
Well, it could have stole it from yourself, or maybe you read my signature on Stormfront. Who knows? But as long as you got it,
we don't care who
see a lot more.
We don't care how they get it as long as they get it.
That's it. Yep.
But I was pretty funny. It was on about a huge civil rights liberal post out west. Pretty rare to see a response going into anti-racism being a code word for anti-white. And now I've seen that twice, one for Seattle and one for San Francisco. They weren't great posts, but that was, I mean, someone's getting the talking points and these things, once again, it had about 50 commenters, about half the commenters, because the area is so liberal, about half the commenters are self-hating white baby boomers. And the other half were questioning things, but the one that said anti-racism is just a code word for anti-white, I just fell over laughing. I'm like, that's good stuff.
Yeah, it is good stuff. But even when you say it was like 50-50, a couple of years ago, me and Adelheim went on the Hand Clean Homes forum, and we were outnumbered like 900-1. what's interesting is, I can already see the difference now. I can see if I went on the Daily Mail newspaper website and printed something that was pro-BNP or just pro-white. I'm pretty confident about 70% of the other commentators there are going to be agreeing with me, irrespective of what the actual story heading says, regardless of what these journalists are saying and all the rubbish they're pumping out, regardless of that, more and more people are just not buying it anymore, and I can really see that happening.
That's what happens in a closed society, is someone like Bob will come into like a little communist state, and he'll write the script, and they'll be doing it for 2 or 3 years. Then all of a sudden, it hits traction, and then within so many months, the whole thing just starts pillaring down. That's how fast it is, folks. Everything starts with a sound and vibration, but once it starts, it cannot be stopped. That's why Bob doesn't get interviewed. That's why we don't get called for interviews. Lord Nelson's not getting called for BBC interviews, and he won't. They don't want you to know something like Lord Nelson is out there. They don't want you to know that because we know how this stuff is done. But when it starts with a sound and a vibration, it is unstoppable, and there's nothing you can do to stop it. The only thing you can do when a problem like that is created is not react to it. Because if you react to it, Lord Nelson is going to give you the solution. And that's the problem.
That's the thing, but regarding the BBC, I don't want to appear on Question Time because I think I could get violenced. Violence is not a good thing.
Well, they have all different...
I would have smacked that black American with the side of my hand. Not really hit her. Not proper hit her, but... Well, I probably just, I don't know.
The way to do it from now on is I'm interested to see, I don't know if you know how many gigs are being downloaded from my site. Last month it was like 120 gigs or 115 gigs by the end of it, and that's for October. And over 60% is in Anglosphere. Quite a number are young BNP members, so I'm interested to see who hits a consistent message. It's going to happen.
I've noticed a lot of Bob Whitaker stuff appearing in the BNP. One interesting guy to follow in the BNP is a guy called Simon Darby, and he has his own blog. He's like the assistant manager or the second in command after Nick Griffin, and you can listen to him being interviewed in some of the radio shows here in the UK.
Yeah, he's very good.
He's
the one that came very close to the mantra. Right.
He did, almost word for word. And I can let you into a little secret. I can't give any names over here, but there is somebody who posts on Bob's blog who works alongside one of the top members of the BNP. I can't say any more, but there is a connection.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean to say that. I can only tell you that there's people who are very, very much into Bob, who are not leaders of the BNP, but they're sort of working alongside some of the key people. I don't know if that's getting through from them or whatever, but that's what I know.
Okay, well, that's what we're seeing. Something's going on over there, which is good. Undercover lovers are good. I'm guessing that BBC thing was partially set up by someone who likes the BNP and they don't know it yet. Because that was a softball. That was obvious. That's precisely what you want when white rabbits are coming out of a demoralized state with a ton of negative conditioning. You want to keep pointing out the obvious, keep pointing out the truth over and over again. These Asians and Africans are not God's gift to any rabbit hole necessarily.
No, that's true, and of course. The crime situation on the ground is getting worse as well. But the point of the matter was the establishment, it seems like they've stopped trying to sell this anymore in a positive way. I can still remember when they tried to sell it to us as great joy and utopian multicultural happiness. They seem to have given up on that now because the crime stats are just so ridiculous. So now it's like you either accept this or you're a white supremacist Nazi.
Yeah.
They've given up on the positive cell. It's purely now the negative cell. So there's no more like this is going to be great. We're all going to have blah blah. Now it's purely negative. You accept this or you are a racist. End of. Anyway, it's interesting. Now I'll shift.
I was waiting for Griffin to do the famous "In your opinion, I'm a Nazi." You're just saying that because I'm white. Neo-Nazi is something you yell at anyone white with an opinion. And then when they say, well, no, all whites are Nazis, yada, oh, no one's flooding Africa with non-Africans, saying, gee, you don't support your own dispossession? You're a neo-Nazi African supremacist. No one's flooding Africa with non-Africans and saying, gee, if you don't support this, you're a neo-Nazi separatist in China. No one's flooding Saudi Arabia with non-Arabs and saying, gee, you're a neo-Nazi Arab separatist. Only white children are being affected by this. Only white countries are doing this. Only white politicians support this. It's genocide. That's all you really have to do.
That's so correct. If you watch the interview on Question Time, there's one point where you can tell he's going to mention genocide, and the other people on the panel keep interrupting him.
Yeah.
And he allowed himself to be interrupted. He should have just ignored them and hammered the word genocide home. He was about to say it, and I was on the edge of my seat. And that was, I mean, the guy was under a tremendous amount of pressure there.
I can
tell you that at the end of the day, he's trying to win the hearts and minds of the people.
Yeah.
And he played it in that respect very, very well. He could have done a couple of things better. And the David Duke comments, if you watch it, you can tell he's not wanting to be betrayed.
He does say he doesn't say anything. He can't say anything because it's illegal.
And that was regarding the Holocaust. That was a very good one.
But that's the point. He said he can't speak his mind because it's illegal. That's the point he made to me. He could have been better, but when you've been around that long and when you've been beat up that long, he did something that needed to be done. He put himself in the place of the average person in Britain, and they saw that. That's fine. That's wonderful. He's saying, I'm sitting here taking the heat like you do every day on the job just because I'm white. That's what it says to white rabbits. That's good.
And it was very, very appreciated. If you notice, when the mainstream media try to do a hit piece on the BNP, they tend to leave Nick Griffin's name out of it because he's becoming kind of like an icon. And I know that's not always a good thing, but the point of the matter is, when you read the comments on the newspaper websites, when it's a genuine supporter, they are mentioning Nick Griffin by name. When it's someone detracting, they just talk about the BNP and they try to sort of brush over the Nick Griffin part of it. The guy has become, for better or worse, he's become a kind of icon among the British people. And that Question Time thing really did cement it. And I think if he went head-to-head with any politician in the United Kingdom and he had an election tomorrow, he would be Prime Minister.
Oh, yeah. I agree with that, too, because he's speaking to the hearts and minds of the people. And it takes a while for him to figure out how to work in Bob's consistent message, because he knows Bob, he knows what's going on, and he's trying to lean that way. But, you know, there's also a big benefit to being a hard-headed nationalist. They make great organizers at a local level, and the BNP has to be able to organize at a local level. So that's one thing he's done very, very well. There's upsides and downsides to everything, but there are going to be some second, third tier that go wild with the mantra because it's just so easy. It's so easy to do what you do.
That's one thing I meant to, that you just actually reminded me. I meant to post the mantra on Simon Darby's blog. I'm going to do that actually after this talk. The thing is that if you can get, I mean, that, I don't know how many thousands of supporters the BNP have now, but if we can get them speaking the mantra, then that's going to become so powerful, because if you take 20,000 people and they start spreading that in their daily lives, that's going to touch another 50 or 60,000 people and so on. So I think that the BNP is definitely getting the sort of Bob Whitaker side of things. But I think it's very important that they have to try and distance themselves from websites like Stormfront. I mean, I'm a member of Stormfront. I post on Stormfront. I love Stormfront. But if I ever got put into that Question Time situation, I don't want that to try and defend everything some 18-year-old kid in Manchester or Texas once said from the safety of his computer screen. I'm just going to stand there and say, here's what I said, and you can all check my posts, and here's what I believe.
Well,
so there is a danger. Go on.
I basically do the same. I do the same thing to everything. In your opinion, everyone that posts on Stormfront is Nazi. You're just saying that because they're white. Anti-racism is code word for anti-white. In your opinion, I just keep doing in your opinions in their face. because they are trained monkeys and they will constantly yell that. What I was surprised is that they let Asians and Africans let Nick Griffin make statements to Nick Griffin's. I thought they would have trained white, self-hating white people asking him questions. That's what I thought they were going to do.
Well, you see, what happens is they start to believe their own propaganda. And they obviously believe that if they have non-whites, they'd be so powerful. Something similar happened to me once when I was living in London last year. I got into a debate with this French woman who was studying journalism. And it was regarding race and the genocide of whites. And she asked me to meet her in a couple of days' time in a bar, and she wanted me to speak to a friend of hers. And she actually brought along one of the guys from the journalist college or uni, whatever it is. She's studying journalism. But stupidly, they brought along a girl from Mexico. And they actually thought that this non-white person would be like kryptonite, that, you know, how could I tell this non-white person that she's, you know, blah. And it was stupid. All I did is take the arguments that those white anti-whites put to me. I turned their own arguments around and projected their arguments onto this Mexican person with relation to her race and her native homeland of Mexico. And the whole thing fell apart.
A precise example of what you did, because you're very good at doing this precise thing. Give the listeners a precise example of what you said to the Mexican.
Well, there was various things, but for example, if they said to me, I'll give you something really bog simple, look, we all bleed red, why can't we all come together? Are you really saying that all the Mexican people in Mexico should be replaced with Chinese and Pakistani Muslim people to the point where Mexicans become an ethnic minority in Mexico, and you're saying you think that's okay because we all bleed red? Are you crazy? You know? And I would say to the Mexican girl, I think her name was Galia, you know, what do you think of that, Galia? This person is trying to say that you Mexicans are a kind of non-existent social construct and that you could all have blonde hair and blue eyes and it wouldn't really matter. You know, do you agree with that? And just kind of just turn it around. Just take the argument. But if you've got a non-white person sitting there, it's great. And, you know, obviously they're going to try and go along with it for the sake of winning an argument. And just put your hands up and say, well, I'm sorry, I think that's racist against Mexicans. I don't believe that Mexicans should all be Chinese or whatever. I believe that Mexico is for the Mexicans. It's really, really simple. But yeah. For the point, no matter what, they get so... I've seen it so many times, and you see it on a opposing viewers in Stormfront, where these anti-whites get so brainwashed in college and through the mainstream media that they appear on opposing viewers in Stormfront, or they meet someone like you and me in their life, and they really believe that they're going to give us a damn good intellectual thrashing, that they have some incredible insight, and that we're all these crazy little Nazis who want 10, 6 million little Jewish girls into bars of soap and lampshades. And it's interesting, you can see the shock in their eyes when they get confronted with the truth, if you like. And they really do believe it's going to be like they were told in college or on TV, that the only people who are going to stand against white genocide are brainwashed little racist Nazis. And of course, that's not the case.
Well, they've been set up for failure. That's the problem. Brainwashing always sets you up for failure eventually. Anytime you have a society that's deeply demoralized, it sets you up for a problem. They're not going to be able to respond to something like you. See, my style is a little, for listeners, of course, already know me. They know my style is a little bit different than Lord Nelson. Lord Nelson takes apart arguments and presents it from a non-white view, because what sane black man would sit there after being flooded with non-Africans and say, well, you know, this is okay. So what he's doing is taking apart and put it together. Or what I do is something very similar. I say, well, you're missing my point. No one's flooding Mexico with non-Mexicans and saying, gee, we all bleed red, and since we all bleed red, we're going to create a blended humanity in only Mexico. No one's flooding Africa with non-Africans and saying, gee, since we all bleed red and Jesus loves us, we're going to create a blended humanity in only Mexico. No one's flooding China with non-Chinese and saying, gee, we all bleed red, and since we all bleed red and Jesus loves us all, we're going to create a blended humanity in only China. Only white children are being affected by this. Only European countries are doing this. only white leaders support this, it's genocide. And I do the same thing over and over again until they get it. Once they start getting it, it becomes funny. But your style is slightly different, and that's fine. That's why I have you on here.
That's okay. It's got to remember, there's two sides to everything. There's actual there's an underlying thinking behind something, and then there's that, how you're going to use it in an actual debate, sort of nose to nose. And, you know, things can vary. I mean, I always like saying, well, if someone puts an argument like, well, the one that's going around at the moment, and you've probably heard it, is mixed race people have superior genes because and they're supposed to have better resistance against disease, which is not true. But anyhow, the thing about that is, rather than going into details and trying to argue that point with detailed statistics, I just turn around and say, are you actually now trying to tell me that all the black children in Africa need to be mixed with Chinese and Pakistani Muslim children? Because you think that will breed a superior race of people? That the blacks are so inferior that they will be made superior by mixing with Chinese people? Are you saying that? Because I think that's racist against blacks. I think you're crazy.
Yeah.
And just, you'll find that yeah, white person just can't go there.
Right, right. And that is your style. Whereas the listeners would know immediately, what I would do is just say, well, wait a minute. No one's flooding Africa with non-Africans saying, gee, mixed race people are superior, so we're going to create a blended humanity in only Africa. No one's doing any of those things. But both ways point out attempted a genocide, a clear, consistent targeting. And that's what you always want to do. You see, what Lord Nelson isn't doing, listeners, Lord Nelson isn't arguing race. He's not making an argument. He's making a point that no only white children are being affected by this. Only white rabbit holes are this is only happening in white rabbit holes, and only white rabbit leaders are doing this. No one else is doing this. It's genocide. Yeah, they're committing a lot of crime. Yes, but guess who let them in? Someone let them in, right? So we have power in this situation, but it first has to start internally. You have to bring things back home and not make an argument and make a point.
I think we've been so busy in the past of trying, we've been so because we are right, we've been so determined to prove that we're right with statistics and various things. But if you listen to what Bob Whitaker says, and it's so true, it's really about this is psychological warfare, and there is no point in rhyming off stats and figures and showing everybody how clever you are. You've really just got to hit them right between the eyes, and I like the way that you do it. And I have my own little way, but they're both amount to the same thing, basically. I really try to put people in, and it depends who you're dealing with, but if you're dealing with a white anti-white, you really can just put them right on the spot, because believe me, you will not lose in this kind of argument. They cannot go there. A white anti-white cannot tell you that they believe that black children in Africa are inferior to mixed-race children to the extent that all of blacks in Africa should be mixed with Chinese people. And if they do go there, you've now got the moral high ground. You could appear on that Question Time show in front of everybody and say, well, I think you're racist against blacks. And take it from there. That's not the end of the argument, but that's where it starts. You've now got the moral high ground, and from there you can continue to just keep squeezing and pressing and twisting that nerve until they actually capitulate. And that's how you do it, basically. It's not foolproof. I'll probably get into a debate now with somebody on Stormfront, or these will tie me in knots. But that's what happens.
Oh no, there's nothing foolproof. I will say that the approach does work very well in certain times. I was around someone, and I've only been able to use your approach or something similar once, and I asked the particular anti-white to make all the arguments for the replacement of Europeans in America by Mexicans. And they start listing off all the stuff Christopher Columbus did, you know, all the usual textbook stuff.
Yeah.
And then I say,
yeah,
now I want you to make the same argument for the replacement of Africans in Africa by the Chinese.
Excellent. I never thought of that, but that is good.
Then they looked at me, and I said, no, I want you to make the same argument. And they said they wouldn't do it. Then I said, because if you did it, you'd be a racist. And I started making fun of them. I started calling them self-hating white baby boomers. I started making fun of what they were drinking. They were drinking Starbucks coffee. So I just started making fun of them all the way around. But once I got my foot in the door, I started humiliating them. I wasn't so much interested in winning an argument. Again, we're not arguing. We're just making a point. But once the double standard starts coming out to white rabbits, and that's all we're focusing on, I don't care about Mexican rabbits. They don't have any power. I care about white rabbits because white rabbits can do anything we want to do. We got Godzilla. Yes, we do. And what I want them to do is start focusing on themselves. But I think the approach is actually very, very good for the right circumstance. It is funny.
That's correct. I like what you did there, actually. And it's not always possible to do this, but if you can lay the groundwork of where the debate is going to go, it's a bit like a general choosing the battlefield and choosing where his forces are going to be lined up, getting to choose the top of the hill, so the enemy's got to come up the hill. I always try, if I can, to put down the groundwork, to lay the battle plan in advance. And what I will do is, I will just mention that, you know, there's been this rumor going around that that people who call themselves liberals, or the perfect one, the one that Bob gave us, there's a rumor going around that anti-racism is really just a code word for anti-white. Now, if you get that in, and then you do what you did to those people in a Starbucks, drinking a Starbucks coffee, you've already laid the foundation. It's like a big concrete floor.
Well, what you're doing is doing the basics. You're creating a problem. Immediately, that problem gets a reaction, and you own the solution. It's just basic human behavior. And I'm going to go into this again in my next one, but I'm going to talk about some pretty wild stuff: problem, reaction, solution. But that's what Lord Nelson is doing. He's instigating. He's playing offense instead of defense most of the time. The white nationalist, and for 50 years you've been playing defense, with the exception maybe of a handful like Bob Whitaker. We don't play defense, we play offense. So we're constantly looking to interact or to say something like, there's a rumor that anti-racism is just a code word for anti-white. Well, that is very offensive. You're not waiting for them to do anything.
That's it. I mean, if you come out and just say it, and a lot of times you can, if you just say, anti-racist and a code for anti-white, they can come back at you. What do you mean by that? You know, don't be silly. If you just say, well, I've heard a rumor, but then you go on to have the debate that you had, and then suddenly when they rhyme off all the reasons why whites should be replaced in America with Mexicans, and then you turn it around and say, well, now give me the reasons why blacks should be replaced in Africa with Chinese people, the fact that you laid the foundation of this rumor that anti-racism could just be a code for anti-white, they're going to come down and smash their heads off that sentence. Like, you know, you've actually laid the groundwork, and people, I've had it where people standing by is like, yeah, I can see why anti-racism could be a code word for anti-white. Like you're saying,
that is always my lead off. Anti-racism is a code word for anti-white, and then what they're going to do is try to prove otherwise, and then I'm going to keep pointing out the obvious. No, because no one's flooding Mexico with non-Mexicans and saying Jesus loves everybody. No one's flooding Africa, and it is only white children, only white rabbits are affected by this. I just keep bringing it back and saying it over and over again. It's genocide. I have seen anti-racists keep babbling on time after time, and by the fifth, no, but you don't understand my point. By the fifth time I do that, everyone is just laughing because they get it. And
yeah,
it becomes entertaining.
We've got a lot more friends out there than what we actually realize, and I don't watch television much anymore, but if all we did was sit in front of the TV news, or the CBS, Fox, BBC, it doesn't really matter. You'd be given the impression that you're all alone in terms of this, but you walk into any bar or you know, when you're at work or any social situation, with very few exceptions, and as long as you approach it the right way, you're going to find that you're going to reach a lot of common ground with a lot of people, as long as you do it the right way.
Especially right now, because we got the Talibama, and of course the Talibama is not a problem, he just creates a problem, which gets a reaction, and we have the solution. Yeah, give us our own rabbit hole. We have a solution there. But this has become entertaining. Bob is entertained by this every day, this attacks on Fox News for being white, which is an obviously racial attack that they can't respond to. In other words, they're attacking the so-called conservatives, the reactionary conservatives that never talk about race or never talk about the Hebrews. They never talk about anything racial. Fox News is anti-racist. In other words, Fox News is the largest, wealthiest white news, but they're anti-white, which is so typical. And they're being attacked racially, which is funny.
Yeah, it's so funny because I don't know much about Fox News, but I would imagine you wouldn't get very far in Fox News if you're working for that company. You wouldn't get very far promotion-wise unless you were a fully committed anti-white racist.
Oh, yeah.
And when that ideology turns around and bites them in the backside, it's like the Hillary Clinton thing when she came up against Barack Obama. You know, she would have been pushing the, you know, is America ready for the first female president? You know, is America ready yet? And that would have been the whole sales pitch. And make no mistake, only a black male or black female could have stopped Hillary from becoming the next president of the United States. It would have been a case of, you know, do you support Hillary Clinton or are you a sexist? You know, this kind of thing.
What is funny is that the liberals say if Barack Obama was white, he would have won by a landslide against the Republican, and he's right. They're right. They're 100% right in that. He barely won. He didn't win by some landslide, and that's just because he's black. So they are right on that. This has become entertaining. I've waited a long time to see this, but this has become these attacks on Fox News is a neocon news network, which, like you said, it's just anti-white. They can't talk about anything racial. It's all we all got to get along, which means only whites need to get along. But more and more, the Glenn Becks, the Bill O'Reillys are having to point out that it's just anti-white. They can't go there, but they got to go there. It becomes funny. It becomes comedy. What it does is it puts pressure on our enemy, the Lone Ranger. People that look like us and have power over us, but they won't represent our interests. It becomes entertaining.
I know what you mean. Another side to this as well, we're kind of like, we look at the most important issue, which is the genocide against our race, which is the number one issue. But there's these other people out there, the Alex Jones, I know he's a bit of a controversial figure, I'm not a big supporter of him. But the point of the matter is, whether it's establishment or not, he's getting a lot of publicity, and whatever the truth of Alex Jones is, I don't know. But I do know that his show and what he's doing is really competing with the mainstream corporate media. Another very interesting guy, the guy called Michael Rivero, who's actually of some distant Jewish extraction. Now, I'm not saying I support the guy or anything like that. Don't get this wrong. But these guys are getting a lot more credibility over the internet and getting more and more listeners and more followers. And the corporate media is losing its respectability. People are getting to the point where people aren't taking them seriously anymore.
Alex Jones is now on Sirius Radio. Apparently his attorney is the same attorney as Edgar Brothman's sister. Their whole website saying he's owned by Zionists. And that's what he's doing. He talks about everything but race. One of the reasons... That's one of the reasons you don't like him, of course. He never mentions this genocide against us or the fact that everyone in charge is white and trying to kill us. Or trying to, you know, flood our homes with only non-white rabbits. But one of the reasons I took the angle I've taken in the show is because of the trend. The trend is that guys are listening to Stormfront. Guys and gals are listening to white nationalist media all over the place. They're listening to political cesspool, but they're also going to InfoWars and Alex Jones for their conspiracy tidbits. And that's why I took that angle. It was the largest avenue that was non-racial. There's no racial platform there. And that's why I angled into that.
The thing about it is, what the underlying trend that I can see there is that people are turning away from their corporate establishment media. More and more people are not buying into it anymore. Now, there is a big danger that they all become mesmerized by Alex Jones and they manage to defeat the New World Order, but we all become coffee-colored and there's no more white people. I mean, that's the danger of Alex Jones. Mike Rivero, his attitude towards Israel and Jews makes us sound like Zionists. I mean, the guy is so anti-Israel and anti-Jewish, and he does say things that even make me think, oh. But the point of the matter is, these people are non-racial. They are ultimately very dangerous to us because there's like a pressure cooker, and if they can let take the pressure off without bringing race into it, then that is the big danger to ourselves because our race is in the thing. That's a fact, and so I see the danger with these people. It's just a case of up to a point they can be very good for us, but beyond that point, they're ultimately very, very dangerous, I would say.
Yeah, well, the good news is that this is mostly an Anglosphere, and there's a German, Russian, Italian axis coming together, and Anglosphere is bankrupt. The reason they need an Alex Jones, a white Christian guy, who I believe is married to a Hebrew woman, the reason they need him is they're trying to control an energy flow, and that's one of the reasons I talk about it. We're not going to give them any. We're not going to get. If I have to talk about conspiracy theories, or you know, I'll go in any angle. I threatened to put Brian, Bob's assistant, in a white rabbit uniform and or white rabbit costume and put him on the Eiffel Tower. Whatever works, we'll do.
Well, that's quite. I mean, this is the thing. It's you know, everything. There's always wheels within wheels. There is things happening with the establishment that are not just racial. Things to do with the banks and a lot of things happening. And what Alex Jones seems to be doing is tapping into that, sensationalizing a lot of it, and at the same time leaving the one key ingredient out of it.
That's the whole goal.
I'm thinking that to some extent, I'm not so sure if they're leading the charge away from the established media, or if they're actually tapping into it, you know, sort of getting all those disaffected people who have finally had enough and just, you know, collecting them.
They're trying to control an energy flow. They're trying to control that energy and channel it in a non-racial way. And what we're doing is tapping into it. The problem is that there's too many non-Europeans. They flooded the place. It's just, you know, ladies and gentlemen, if they're not talking about this, the fact that only white countries, only white children, and only white politicians are trying to basically get rid of their founding gene pool, that would be as if the Lakota chiefs and the Cherokee chiefs and the Comanche chiefs tried to replace their Indians. That's not reality. But if you see something like that's happening in white countries and an Alex Jones isn't talking about it, why not?
That's a very, very good point you make there, Horace. To people listening to this, if you're undecided about Alex Jones, and I kind of quite find the guy, so it's very, very entertaining. But at the end of the day, but at the end of the day, we are about to become the first race of people in the whole of human history to be ethnically cleansed by an idea. And it wasn't even our idea. Genocide is genocide. End of. And there's no point in fighting off this supposedly new world order. While at the same time, a whole race of people get replaced in their own former homelands. That doesn't work. And if Alex Jones can't see that, then he's a fraud. It's simple as that. And whether or not there is a new world, there's always conspiracies that are very, very real. I see things happening in my work. I see things happening behind closed doors in politics, and they're really very not nice.
No.
And it doesn't surprise me that people at the height of government behind closed doors since the beginning of time, history is full of it. Just get a history book out and read what the ancient kings and queens of England were planning against their own sovereign people centuries ago.
Sure.
And it's always been happening. And so the things he talks about, I mean, a lot of it's so sensationalized that I can't take it too seriously. But the basic undercurrent of what he's saying is just pretty damn obvious. It's not exactly that. It's not rocket science.
Right. But the biggest challenge for Anglosphere is there's no way to hold up the system. There's no way to hold it up. And so they're trying to control an energy flow. The biggest challenge for the Alex Joneses, or for those trying to lead the sheep astray. For instance, Alex Jones always talks about getting the elite. Well, I just handed him an attempted genocide. There's whole groups in Europe attached to the Russians that have just rooms full of this stuff waiting to go. That's the problem, ladies and gentlemen. There's a group so cornered at the top of Anglosphere, they don't feel they have a way out. And that's something I don't even think Alex Jones knows. But if Alex Jones is worried about getting them, well, they got them on attempted genocide outright, and there's a damaged party. There's a party that were supposed to get their own rabbit hole, and, you know, Martin Luther King got shot in the head. You think the Soviet archives don't know something about that? Guess again, he was a Soviet agent. So, I mean, if you want to talk about something, you could talk about this attempted genocide against white children by their own leaders, which is unprecedented in the history of the world. And I don't know why they're not. And you'll get them. There's parties in Europe that will call the tribunals once Engel Spear's on it's on its back. In other words, once the banking system goes under, they're going to call tribunals off this and probably a dozen other things that we don't know about. They won't hesitate. That's the problem here.
That is so true, and I like the way you put it, that he's channeling an energy flow. That is just so correct. And like I've already said, if anyone's on the fence about Alex Jones or any of these people,
do they talk about race? No.
Exactly. Can I just tell you a funny story? How I got to know about Alex Jones was an English friend of mine, and she didn't know about my white nationalist activities and Stormfront and all that stuff. I just done my first radio show with Chuck Roy for Stormfront Radio, and so suddenly we're sitting in a little cafe bar in London, and she says, "Oh, I've got something to tell you, but you haven't got to tell anybody else about this." And she was like, she's telling me she's really into this real groundbreaking thing, but other people wouldn't understand, so I must promise not to say anything to anybody else. And I thought, wow, I wonder if she's a poster on Stormfront. I wonder if she heard me on the Truck Rod Show. Do you know where it was? She starts telling me that she's really into Alex Jones. I'm like, whoa, you call that radical? Check this out. So I actually wrote down, I actually emailed the link to me on Stormfront Radio with Chuck Roy and Mary Kelly. That's that radical. On this New World Order nonsense, come on, get serious.
Well, you know what I do? I get all the emails I've gotten have in regards to Joseph P. Farrell and the conspiracy stuff that I talk about, which isn't really a conspiracy. It's right in front of everyone's face. But that whole angle has picked up huge traffic. So you're 100% right. You know, that's what people want to hear about. But you got to talk about white genocide, because if you're not talking about this largest attempt at genocide ever, in my eyes, you're illegitimate. Because if you want to get them, someone already has them to the extent that they got problems.
That's so true. And it's like this big, gigantic elephant sitting in the middle of the room that nobody can talk about. You know, I mean, it's white Europeans are going to become a minority in their own European homelands by around 2050. These are official statistics. But hey, let's not worry about that. Let's just worry about the New World Order. I mean, get real. Come on.
Right. Well, what the people running Anglosphere are actually worried about, they know that we're on the eve of collapse, and you've got a Russian-German access. And I don't know if you've ever seen Russia, but Russia is twice as big as America. And they're worried about...
Russia's pretty scary.
They're worried about Lord Nelson and the Horaces and all the little Lord Nelsons and Horaces walking out on them. And they're never going to have power again. Because what do you have if you don't have a European gene pool? Well, you don't have Western civilization. And so-called Western civilization just moves east. In other words, they've screwed up things so much that they're worried about losing their founding gene pools. They've done something so crazy. So you got a group cornered. They're cornered from a couple different angles, but you got to talk about race. And I think a lot of people want to talk about it. That's why I call it white rabbits, you know? The indigenous white rabbits of Europe.
That's so true. An interesting thing, me and another friend of mine appeared on the InfoWars forum, chat forum, and we simply posted Bob's mantra and got talking along those lines. And people were very, very open to what we were saying. These are followers of Alex Jones. I mean, to me, Alex Jones takes people who have already, like you put it so much better than I actually could. He channels that energy of people who have already woken up and just keeps them away from the race issue, but dazzles them with New World Order and chemtrails and all this sort of stuff.
They're going to come back. They're going to ultimately come back to race, because that's the basics. That's just, it's obviously racial.
Yeah.
The only leaders he talks about are white.
That's true. The only exception would be the guy Mike Rivero. He's very interesting. He talks about the Jewish question to an extent that would make David Duke blush. I'm not saying again the guy doesn't come into race. He doesn't mention the fact that whites are becoming an ethnic minority in their own countries, and that this is an agenda, and it's an agenda that's being enforced. It's not a coincidence.
Right.
How do I know that? Because I speak up about it, I get called a racist. If it was just some kind of coincidence, you could talk about it openly, and people wouldn't keep throwing all these all these buzzwords at you, you know, white supremacist, Nazi, Holocaust denier, blah, blah, blah. This is being enforced. It's not an action.
Yeah,
all white countries, only white countries.
The Hebrews that are going down the Jew angle, like Mr. Rivera, are missing the point as well. Post-World War II, the A. Foxy Foxmans from the Anti-Defamation League have agreed with Hitler. He called European Christians a Nazi. Every little English kid that hears this has been called a Nazi. When someone from the Anti-Defamation League does that, and he's Jewish, he's agreeing with Hitler. He's saying Jews and Aryans will not peacefully coexist. That's what Hitler said. When they say a billion Muslim Nazis, they're saying on a global scale, they're saying we will not peacefully coexist with anybody is what they're saying. And that's the problem that the average Hebrew has come to see, that they've got leaders that are nuts.
Well, this is it. I mean, I don't understand what's actually in this for the Jewish people, because, I mean, the new majority population of the whole of Western Europe by 2050, if nothing's done about this drastic soon, will be North African Muslims. And I wouldn't think that Jews are going to fare very well in Europe with North African Muslims in charge. With a guy like me in charge, I don't really have anything to fear. I don't have anything with anybody. I just don't want to be replaced in my own homeland. I don't want to see my race get genocided.
We don't like pink rabbits, those rabbits that look like us, that have power over us, that won't do what's best for us. Right? Doesn't matter whether they're capitalism or Judaism or environmentalism. If you look like us,
exactly.
You have power, you're a pink rabbit, and you got to go. Doesn't matter what you are.
It's a thing about doing us harm. It's exactly it. I mean, I don't know what more to say about this subject here. The Jews that are in power and are really pushing the genocide of the white race, and we can name them, this is no big secret. I mean, let's go back to the Frankfurt School.
They've agreed with Hitler. They say we can't peacefully coexist with you.
I mean, there it is. I mean, you just, I absolutely agree with what you're saying. I just can't understand the insanity of why. I mean, it's not all Jews. There's lots of our
they
own.
Maybe they know something we don't.
I don't know. Maybe they're just crazy. You know? Maybe they're just crazy. I mean,
maybe
always try
crazy.
To imagine that behind closed doors,
they're
these super intelligent beings.
I think they're actually reading Stormfront. They actually think Hitler's going to come back here on a flying saucer and get them or something. I don't know.
It's an interesting point. We did a show with Chuck Roy a couple of days ago, the first non-white person ever to appear on Stormfront Radio, as far as I'm aware. And he's a black guy. He's a Stormfront name is Buppy. And he's very supportive of what we had to say. And it went along quite well. We tried to get an anti-white to appear, but we didn't get any takers.
Well, the challenge is that they don't really have any power. We have all the power. What they're trying to do is make white people genocide white people. The challenge is that they're too spread out over too much land, and they don't control Russia or Germany anymore. They've lost control. Now they're losing control in Anglosphere. The Nikki Griffins have pressure. They just got problems. They got too many problems. They got financial problems. It all comes together. I mean, if China tries to make itself non-Chinese, you know, in 1965, America was 89% Indo-European. Right now, China, according to the CIA, is 91% Chinese, Han Chinese. If China tries to make itself non-Chinese, it's going to implode the place eventually.
Here's an interesting point. If you went down the road of trying to genocide the Chinese race, and imagine you got 50% there, okay, and then suddenly it starts to fall apart, wouldn't you feel a little bit nervous if you was one of the key elites of the Chinese people living in China, suddenly seeing it all fall apart? I mean, talk about getting caught with your hand in the till.
Well, that's the problem. That's the biggest problem the world faces. So if the listeners see Israel open up an attack on Iran, it may not just be because Israel's defending itself. It may be because some Israeli elites are in so much, and some Hebrew elites in London and New York and in Washington are in so much trouble, there's no walking away from this. Because Putipoot, you can hang people all day long over genocide with a damaged party.
Yeah, I've been trying to encourage a whole list of people to deal with themselves for the last 30 or 40 years, and I saw the tide turning and I saw it being exposed, I'd be feeling a little bit nervous, whether I was Jewish or not. It's not, you know, you don't have to be Jewish to be part of this, but yeah, that is a big part of it. But there's so many white non-Jews who are equally disgusting.
It doesn't really matter whether it's capitalism, Judaism, or globalism, or environmentalism. If you look like me and have no loyalty to me, I'm not your friend. If you're in power, if you're not in power, if you're local rabbi or something, or even your local Protestant minister, I just don't care. I don't care about anyone that's not in any position of power because I figure they're inconsequential. But you just got to keep isolating Lone Ranger. The conditions are isolating the O'Reillys, the Bill O'Reillys, and the Glenn Becks, because he's going to have to talk about race because he's getting attacked racially. That's why it's so entertaining. Obama creates an immediate problem. He's not a problem, but he creates a problem. He creates a racial problem immediately, and that's wonderful.
It is. And what's so actually interesting, I haven't looked at the... I imagine that the Bill O'Reillys and that they have some kind of website where you can have comments. Usually comments are having to be controlled these days. But I know I've already mentioned it, but whenever a leading journalist in the UK writes a hit piece on the BNP or on the race subject, when they're actually pushing the anti-white racist agenda or the genocide agenda, and they have a good way of disguising it in very many different ways. But you read the comments and they're just getting shouted down to heck. I mean, you know, I can see the thing starting to fall apart, and I hope I'm right.
Yeah, it's over with. It's over with across the board on every different angle. China has tried to make itself non-Chinese. They collapsed manufacturing. There's no manufacturing in Anglosphere. They sold it out. They gave it away. It's just become horrendous. And what's entertaining is the Russians and the Germans are laughing all the way. They're laughing all the way. And this should be an interesting ending, but we're going to have to cut this interview off. And listeners, I promise to have the entertaining and the infamous Lord Nelson back on from across the pond. And we'll do this again, Lord
Horace,
Nelson.
Horace, can I just say one thing?
Sure.
I just want to say I was talking with Chuck Roy and Buffy, the Black Stormfront, the other day, and I just want to say I would like to put myself forward for the world's first interracial swimming championships, which means that I compete in swimming, but only with non-whites, not with other white guys. I reckon I could become the world's first interracial swimming champion. And so
I
put it out there.
I think there's one mulatto swimmer that's pretty good, but I don't know. Maybe there's one.
Okay, so maybe I'll come second.
I don't know. There's some Africans that are swimming pretty hard and heavy from North Africa right now to Spain. You might have some competition coming. You know, environment can matter a little bit. You know, they're getting chased by sharks right now, right this minute. So they may give you a run for the money.
In that case, I better find some other way to try and get famous then. Fair enough.
I think it would be entertaining to see the average white swimmer go against competition level non-European swimmers. I don't know. You may be able to whip them all. I put my money on Lord Nelson because I know Lord Nelson can sail a ship. So why not swim? But this is all for this the show, ladies and gentlemen. I'm going to let Lord Nelson go and. We'll be back on number 20. So thanks for the interview, Lord Nelson. We'll do this again, okay, buddy?
Cheers. Thanks for having us on. Cheers.
I'll talk to you.
Hopefully you enjoyed that interview with me and Lord Nelson, that porch talk or whatever you'd want to call it, this conversation back and forth with me and Lord Nelson on practical politics, on current events, and I'll be working into more things like this because I think it's educational to hear the approach from multiple different angles. But I was asked a question, and it's a relevant question, and I'm going to, since we talked about genocide and the genocide laws again, I was asked America, you know, about America specifically, the United States of America, has never really signed on to like Article 2 of the Convention of Prevention of Punishment of Crime of Genocide from 1948. All the European nations signed on. A lot of other places signed on. The United Kingdom is under that, but America doesn't sign that or any other international agreements. For the most part. And I was asked, well, how can you hold someone to some standard if they never signed it? Well, you can't, if it's a big, wealthy, powerful country, 30 years ago, you're going to have problems. Let me give you a what you see is what you get. Dr. Henry Kissinger has been wanted by several different tribunals and courts and whatnot over certain human rights violations and all kinds of stuff. Several different parts of the world, South America, France, so on and so forth. I don't know the full extent of it, but 20 years ago, he could get on a plane and go around the world 20, 30 years ago, and no one could touch him because America was that powerful, America was that wealthy. Now, Dr. Kissinger really has to watch where he flies into. So this type of thing always catches up with you. If Iraq, there was all kinds of different international protocols Iraq didn't sign. It didn't mean anything to Saddam Hussein. Once it all comes down around you. So America is not near as wealthy and powerful as it once was. Why? Because China tried to make itself non-Chinese. You know, in 1965, America was 89% European. China right now is 91% Chinese. If China tried to make itself non-Chinese, what's going to happen? You're going to go bankrupt. And then someone's going to have your number. So the question is relevant, but it's not really relevant right now. It was relevant 20 years ago, per se. But it's not relevant right now because once it comes down, you're in a whole different ball game. There's also something else. It's called what I call political discretion. They don't have to deport certain people to certain countries for certain things. For instance, if some American citizens wanted by the German authorities for speech crimes, well, let's say they write a book in America denying the Holocaust or something, then it ends up being sold in Germany. Well, you can try to deport them for that. Germans can try to get them, but it's up to the American discretion. Now, the Hebrews would deport them for that and try to throw them in jail or whatever, but you're really talking about discretion. Let me give you another example. In the United Kingdom, there's several different oligarchs wanted by the Russian authorities. Some of them are in the United Kingdom, some of them are Israel. Well, they could deport them if they wanted to. They really want it to, but that's political discretion. You know, they could go into court and say their civil rights are being violated, they can't get a fair trial, so on and so forth. Now, the UK could walk in and say, well, forget that, we're deporting you. So it's just full-spectrum practical politics. It's a lot of if-thens. But when in regards to a broad-based genocide or human rights violation, something like that, and the walls of Jericho, the walls of America are coming down, the place is coming apart, it's not 30 years ago. Things can happen, and you're not going to walk away from it once it comes down, and therein lies the problem. So the answer to the person's question, which is a relevant question, America has never signed any international agreements of the kind, so how are you going to hold them accountable? Well, it's not the 1950s, it's not the 1960s, it's not even 1995. It's 2008, and the place is $100 trillion in the hole and ain't coming back. And once everything comes down, it's like Iraq, you're in a whole new ballgame. Saddam Hussein's in a whole new ballgame. And that's pretty much my answer to that. And this is the end of this should be the end of like 19, and I'll be back with you on 20. We're going to talk about some we're going to go back into the basics a little bit more and a little bit deeper. And this is another episode of Follow the White Rabbit, and I hope you enjoyed this interview.